Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. Business is big and small on the program today. A little bit of consumers, that's you. And of course, the week that was. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday today, everybody, the 12th of November. Good as always to have you along. Yes, there is some economic data to talk about, and we will, but there is some thematic stuff I want to cover as well, so we will do that as well. Anna Swanson is with the New York Times. Neela Richardson is at ADP. Hey, you two.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Neela, let me start with you. And we must, I believe, start with inflation. The Consumer Price Index, as we have all heard by now, up 6.2% year on year, 0.9% month to month. I talked to Treasury Secretary Yellen this week, and among the many things I asked her was, why are you so confident that this is going to be transitory? And I would like to pose to you that same question, whether or not you actually believe this is transitory, and if so, why?
I think from what I can see and what I've talked to my friends who are also economists, yes, we are friends with each other.
I was just going to say, you guys need to get out more.
Anyway. It is transitory with the tail. Longer than anyone expected, not likely to end by summer of next year, likely to have some trailing effects through the economy because it's tied to supply shortages and it necessitates a remake of how the supply chain currently operates. And it also is heightened by labor shortages, which are not being solved quickly. So it's a very complicated inflation story. It's not the traditional story that people are used to from the 1970s when it's related to energy prices. Yeah. It's more complicated to that. It really involves the global movement of goods and goods around the world, which is being challenged by this pandemic.
Anna, what she was talking about was a system with multiple points of failure, one of which you wrote about in the paper this week, truckers down at the Port of Los Angeles, right? There are so many ways that this supply chain goes wrong. The Biden administration is throwing whatever they can at it. And I guess the question is, what can the White House do?
Well, they rolled out a big piece of infrastructure legislation this week, right? We're seeing, major proposed investments in all kinds of infrastructure, $17 billion for the ports alone. The question is this going to have any kind of effect on the immediate supply chain issues? And, that seems pretty unlikely. The White House is trying to emphasize that there are some steps that they're taking that can help. They're lowering the age limit for commercial trucking licenses from 21 to 18. They're trying to, get things moving by setting up these pop-up container yards outside of the Port of Savannah. Mm-hmm. But most of these are longer-term investments, structural investments that, yes, the U.S. transportation system really needs. But at the same time, I still think from a supply chain perspective, these pressures are going to be with us for a long time. Well into next year, I was talking to a professor who specializes in this, and he said he thought supply chain issues could be with us for 3 or 4 years. So
this is
definitely
really?
A full employment program for me. Yeah, that's just one voice. But, the point is they're definitely not going away by Christmas. You can get used to some of these issues here.
Neela, talk to me about that tail, right? Yeah, jump in here, please.
That's a long tail. That's a very long tail, but it's not outside of possibility because what we're talking about is a structural shift in supply chain. This idea that companies have used for a very long time that you can just order enough inventory to meet the current needs has fallen apart over the pandemic. And now we're seeing global demand rise because retailers, for example, need to have stuff on shelves for the holiday season. So they've started ordering in advance, stocking up. And it's not just consumers who've been stocking up over the pandemic. Retailers have been stocking up. Restaurants have been stocking up. Manufacturers have been stocking up. That increases demand, but it also causes shortages in supply. And that's what we're seeing play out. And how companies solve this issue is going to be more long-term, more structural than just getting things back to where they were before the pandemic.
The challenge, of course, Anna, is that American consumers, historically, we want what we want when we want, it, and we are not accustomed to having to wait. And even if it's like another year, forget like, you know, three or four, but even another whole year of this, people are going to start getting really cranky.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, inflation, supply chain shortages definitely make people cranky. And you have this very ironic situation right now where the economy is actually doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. But you ask people how the economy is doing and they don't think that it is, you know, it is doing right. Well. And it's in part because of political polarization, but it's also these, you know, these economic issues, shortages, inflation. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, pandemic burnout has something to do with that as well. Shortages. Shortages, you know, especially around the holidays, are not a great recipe for a good approval rating.
As it happens, yeah, well, that's the politics of it. Mitchell Hartman coming up on consumer sentiment in just a little bit. Neela, let me turn to the job market and the labor market. We have to talk about JOLTS, right? The job opening survey that came out today. 4.4 million people having left their jobs in the reporting period. That is 3% of the American workforce. Is that sustainable? Can we keep going with people moving around like that?
That is a lot of churn. It's very elevated. We've never seen it before, so we can't say right now if it's sustainable. But at the same time, you've seen all this churn. There are 5 million people still sidelined by the pandemic, and there are people who just can't get to work. We tend to think that most work can be done from home. That's not true. In fact, more than 60% of jobs you have to go on site to do. And so this churn is something that is new to the labor market, but it also comes after people staying with their jobs for a very long time in 2020. Mm-hmm. Nobody moved. Everybody stayed put who didn't lose their jobs. And so what we're seeing is also a rebound, a makeup for that time when you may have switched a job last year but didn't.
Yeah. This is on it's a global pandemic, right? Literally by the definition of the word. And so much of it is based on what has happened with global trade, the effects that we're seeing now. And inflation is a global phenomenon. I guess I want to situate for people where we are in this, right? This is still a global thing that is happening here.
Yeah, by global thing, are you talking about trade?
Take your pick. Trade, inflation, supply chain, right? I mean, it's not like at the port of Marseille, things are going swimmingly either, is my point.
No, you're right. I mean, it's all global, Kai. So I do think the United States has been having, some particular trouble with shortages, maybe more so than some other mm-hmm. places, just because U.S. demand has been so strong. I mean, in part because, you know, American savings is pretty high and people are actually doing pretty well here. But you're absolutely right that, you know, there are issues with shortages all over and factory shutdowns all over the globe. I mean, a lot of, issues in the United Kingdom, for example, you're still having, factory and port shutdowns in Vietnam and China. This is truly a global phenomenon. It's something that's going to be with us for quite some time.
I'm still thinking about that person who said to you, it's going to be 3-4 years. I'm trying to wrap my head around that one. Anna Swanson at the New York Times, Neela Richardson, she's at ADP. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, up to end the week. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. One of the things we say around here pretty often, or, you know, we used to when we were all in the office, is that honestly, economic headlines don't really mean much. It's what people are feeling in their everyday that really matters. And Anna was alluding to this. So here we are, late 2021, lots of jobs on offer in this economy, but also inflation like we haven't seen in 30 years. And thus, this morning's report on consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan, which fell in early November to a 10-year low. Here, then, is Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman with a story that we slugged in our rundown today. Why so glum, chum?
Incomes are up, layoffs are down, prices are up, and confidence is down. If there was ever a time for consumers and the economic journalists who cover them to experience economic whiplash...
There is this weird push-pull, people being like, oh no, I'm great, but everything's terrible.
That's Chris Jackson at polling firm Ipsos.
Consumers' personal situations are actually pretty good, but their views of the bigger economy continue to be sort of dire.
And price increases kind of are dire for everything from gas to groceries to rent to utility bills. Bankrate's Mark Hamrick says the latest consumer sentiment survey shows it.
1 in 4 consumers cited inflation-related reductions in their living standards.
Many people have gotten raises. Average hourly earnings are up about 5% in the last year, but prices are also up more than 6%. And in spite of their gloomy outlook, consumers are on a shopping spree, says Mark Cohen at Columbia Business School.
Folks are coming out to shop for things they haven't had any use for because they're getting out and about. Folks are going back to work. They're buying gasoline. They're frustrated by the fact that they can't find a new car.
But they want the new car and clothes and gifts for the holidays. In fact, that strong consumer demand is one big reason supply chains are messed up and prices are soaring. And behind all that, says economist Robert Frick at Navy Federal Credit Union,
COVID is still the 800-pound gorilla in the room, very much the key player in the economy right now. It's certainly going to dog us through this winter.
Keeping many people out of the workforce and out of stores and restaurants, worried about what will happen to their jobs if the pandemic gets bad again. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
After decades of bigger being better, this is clearly the week that corporate America said, nope, we are going the other way. A couple of days ago, it was General Electric saying it's going to split itself up. Today, Johnson & Johnson, also Toshiba. The specifics vary, right? Whether they're splitting into healthcare or aviation or electronics companies. The common thread, though, is that all three say they are aiming for a more focused corporate structure. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher has more on that one.
These big corporations are saying their new smaller companies will be more flexible, responsive, targeted. That's a new way of thinking about successful business.
Going back to the 60s, there was sort of this conglomerates were all the rage.
Jared Harford is a finance professor at University of Washington.
And this idea that if you were good at managing one thing, you were good at managing other things.
Consumers believed that too. A buyer who is content with their GE fridge purchase might have turned to GE when shopping for a digital camera. But our digital devices and new platforms and direct-to-consumer sales have changed brand loyalty, says Dipanjan Chatterjee, an analyst at Forrester.
As consumers, we also are willing to experiment much more with new companies.
Companies, Chatterjee says, that are single-minded. Think Allbirds shoes or Third Love bras.
Perhaps we are saying, hey, when it comes to companies, when it comes to brand, small is beautiful.
And small is beautiful might also be a way to appeal to shareholders, says Jay Brown, a law professor at the University of Denver.
We have a crazy, wild stock market that just keeps increasing every single day.
Brown says companies are under tremendous pressure to perform. Shareholders might not be impressed with meager corporate stock growth when others are rocketing upward.
The individual pieces are a bit more agile and can respond to market forces.
Brown says he could see corporate breakups becoming more of a trend, but he says each company should make sure that's really the right choice and that they're not just following the competition. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
Coming up.
And we're serious about protecting our people.
Gotta be, right? You gotta be. First, though, let's do the numbers.
Dow Industrials up 179 on this Friday, 0.5%, 36,100. The NASDAQ added 156 points, 1%, 15,860. The S&P 500 lifted 33.7 tenths%, 46.82. For the week, the Dow off 0.6%, the NASDAQ down 0.7%, the S&P 500 dipped 0.3%. Hey, so look, maybe breaking up is not so hard to do. I don't know. Amanda Peacher was telling us a minute ago we're seeing a rash of corporate split-ups. So, checking stocks, Johnson & Johnson ascended 1.2% today. GE found 0.6% over on the Tokyo Stock Exchange. Toshiba subtracted 1.3%. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note, 1.57% today. You are listening to Marketplace.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We were talking, Anna, Anil, and I, about the new JOLTS report that was out this morning. The headline for September, more people than ever leaving their jobs. On the flip side, though, something like 10 million job openings, more than a million of them in retail. So with that in mind, and with a nod to the fact that we are gearing up into the thick of the holiday shopping season, a couple of dispatches now from our small business retailers on their personal labor economies.
This is Gary Merriman, the owner of the Fish Hawk in Atlanta, Georgia. At this time, I do not have any job openings. I did hire a new employee about 9 months ago to handle most of my online sales as well as our social media. Wages have remained about the same. In a few cases, I have upped a few key employees because they do such a good job.
This is Irene from Alley Cat Toys in Carrboro, North Carolina. We have had to kind of just put the word out there that we are looking for some additional help for the next 45 days. Some of the recent hires that we've had, some high school kids. We haven't done any official postings. I've been just going through word of mouth. We're asking if they have any recommendations.
You find people where you find people, right? That was Gary Merriman in Atlanta. Irene Kesselman, she's in Carrboro, North Carolina. Americans by the tens of millions are being required by their employers to get vaccinated. And that includes people who work for tribal governments. The Navajo Nation, the Red Lake Band of Ojibwe, the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes are just some that have put mandates in place. And given the state of the national and tribal labor market, there are some economic calculations being made here. Marketplace's Savannah Marr made some calls to the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming.
Holly Perry was among the longest-serving employees at Shoshone and Arapaho Head Start, a preschool on Wind River.
I was a Head Start teacher, and I've been there since 91.
But back in August, Perry and her coworkers received a letter from their employer
saying that the tribes have adopted a new amendment to have everybody vaccinated.
Everybody who works with children on the reservation and everyone who's employed by the Northern Arapaho tribe. Perry declined to get the shot, and then in early November received another letter
saying that I am terminated from Head Start.
Perry, who's 54, says she's getting support from family while she looks for a new job outside the reservation. Jordan Dresser chairs the Northern Arapaho Business Council, which approved the vaccine mandate earlier this year.
It's just to show that we're serious about it, and we're serious about protecting our people.
He says more than 70% of eligible tribal members 12 and older have gotten their vaccines, but surrounding communities are lagging.
Wyoming is one of the lowest in the nation,
with just under 45% of adults fully vaccinated.
Our tribal members take a risk every time they travel throughout the state. This was a way for us to exercise our sovereign muscle and also protect our people at all costs.
Including economic costs. The Northern Arapaho tribe is among the largest employers of Native and non-Native people in the county. And Dresser says most workers have complied with the mandate. But some have moved on. From the tribe's hotel and casino, from its medical clinic, from the reservation's school districts. And in this tight labor market, replacing them is not easy.
We have took a hit in terms of attracting people to come work. And it's just a problem that's going across the nation.
Dresser says the tribe is considering boosting wages for certain positions.
So that we can be competitive with Lander, Riverton.
Lander and Riverton are the two largest towns bordering Wind River, where vaccination rates are low and employer mandates are few and far between. Joseph Kalt is with Harvard's Project on American Indian Economic Development. He says these tribal and border town economies depend on each other.
Pretty intertwined economic conditions there.
He says tribal leaders have taken a more active role in combating the pandemic.
They're balancing the same thing that many other elected officials balancing.
Public health and economic recovery. And for tribal governments,
the answer tends to come out more frequently on that, well, damn, let's protect the public health first. And we saw that in the early stages of the pandemic with how aggressively tribes took about shutting down all their enterprises and their government offices.
And we're seeing it now, Kalt says, with many tribal employers mandating vaccination in some of the least vaccine-friendly parts of the country. Unlike her Head Start coworker, Holly Perry, Leona Half got vaccinated to comply with the mandate. But Half says the preschool lost 4 or 5 other teachers.
Our duties were doubled, you know, and it was just really stressful. It was overwhelming at work.
So overwhelming that she ultimately quit. Now she plans to further her education so she can get a higher paying job. Chairman Jordan Dresser says the Northern Arapaho tribe will weather these staffing challenges, just like it weathered a stay-at-home order and mask mandate while the rest of Wyoming was open for business.
People are comfortable making that sacrifice for each other because Native communities are collective cultures, as opposed to individualistic culture, which is me, me, me.
He says the tribe won't lift its mandate anytime soon. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
The Small Business Administration says small businesses in this economy, that's 500 workers or less, the SBA says, they account for 99.7% of the companies that employ people. They're responsible for 64% of net new private sector jobs and almost half, 49.2%, of all private sector employment. Given that, those businesses deserve more attention than they probably get, so Marketplace's Caroline Champlin gave it to some of them here in L.A.
The store Soap Plant Wacko has been a, quote, purveyor of post-pop culture in the L.A. neighborhood Los Feliz for 50 years. General Manager Tony Martinez says the store is having the same inventory problems as everybody else.
You know, so anything that's like plastic that has like the Made in China sticker, we might not get it this year.
And that's a lot of stuff at the store, which sells books, candy, toys, art, and gag gifts. Martina says prices have gone up on a lot of things.
I haven't heard any complaints from any customers yet because I think everybody knows the deal. I mean, you know, if the groceries are going up, then fake poop will also go up in price.
Still, Martina says her outlook overall is positive because people are already in the store shopping for the holidays.
Some people are outright and they just say, you know, I just want to make sure I can get what I get. I don't want to wait till the last minute and have no choices. I think we're going to do really well. I think we're going to be pretty successful.
In Echo Park, Chris Cortez is the owner of Alternate Universe, a comic books, game, and toy store. He says costs are rising and paper shortages are impacting comic books. But his business is in a good place, with lots of customers coming in.
I'm not going to say we are pandemic resistant, but we're pandemic resilient. And we've got a pretty rosy outlook for the holidays.
He's confident about going up against big corporate stores this year because he says he's able to focus on a very specific customer. In Los Angeles, I'm Caroline Champlin for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which kind of falls into the why bother bucket, I guess. I saw this on CNBC. That big UN climate summit that wraps up today in Glasgow has a carbon footprint twice as big as the last big UN climate summit. That was in Madrid in 2019. 102,000 tons of CO2 emitted by the attendees to that conference, about 60% of it from international air travel to get there. And yes, I know people have to travel to meet face-to-face, and that's important, but ouch. All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context with the travel nightmare that is Thanksgiving nearly upon us. Adobe Digital Insights tracked Thanksgiving reservations made at all the major airlines through November the 7th, up 78% from a year ago, which makes sense, right? Up 3.2%, though, from 2019. So that's one data point. Here's another. AAA says Thanksgiving travel overall should be within 5% of 2019 levels. Either way, lots of people moving around. I, however, will not be one of them. All right, we're leaving. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.